Hello, this is Hernande Altima, founder of First Gen Rise. It is a blog to unite first-generation students, graduates, and professionals seeking to kind of have a platform and discuss their challenges, their successes, kind of use of each other as a resource to elevate into the field that they're seeking or pursuing. So I am a graduate of law school, first person in my family to do so, and now a practicing attorney. But you can visit my blog at www.firstgenrise.com and see all of that. What I really wanted to do today was invite a very dear person to come and chat with me to talk about the different thoughts and emotions and feelings that go through a first-gen's mindset as they're being a student, a graduate, and a professional will come later. Those conversations will come later. But right now, the conversation will be mostly a first-generation student that's in a professional program. So this person is my cousin. Her name is Jidaline Altima, and I'll allow her to introduce herself, but she is studying mental health counseling and has her certificate in addiction counseling. So she comes to this conversation with a plethora of information and experiences and observations. So the next person to speak will be Jidaline.
Hello, everyone. I'm Jidaline Altima. I have 12 years experience in case management in the field of mental health and disability services. I recently obtained a master's degree in mental health counseling and a certificate in addiction counseling. And I'm currently working as a therapist with Contemporary.
So, Jidaline, let's start the conversation really about, you know, I recall, which is 4 years ago for me, when I was a student and I was on the campus grounds and I was thinking to myself, wow, I've made it. It was a feeling of excitement. But then it was a feeling of doubt in my head thinking, you know, that yes, they let me in, but do I really know what I'm doing? Do I really know if this is the right choice that I've made? I knew other people in my network who were also first generation law students that felt the same, but we really didn't know what to say to each other. We were just kind of spreading the same feeling. You know, have you felt that way? Have you known others to felt that way? And what should one do with those kinds of feelings?
I have definitely felt that way. For me, it's a little different because I'm an older graduate, because after undergrad, I decided to take a break. But I do remember applying for graduate school and questioning myself of whether, because I took such a long time off, whether I'm ready or I'll be able to keep up with the workload or the academic demands that it's gonna require of me. I do think the way that I approached it was, I'm a spiritual person, so I approached it in the sense of, this is the path that I felt was chosen for me, that I connected with, so I should be capable, and I felt mentally ready to kind of put the credentials that he needed for me to kind of live into the truth that I was set to live in. So my first day of class was definitely nerve-wracking because the professor was asking questions that a lot of the students were like fresh out of undergrad, so they were more aware of like what was going on currently in the mental health field, where for me it was like a refresher. I had to take a step back and I found myself being really quiet and just listening until the professor asked me a question about the type of theory that I know. And I only knew the basic theory, so I just named the popular ones that he said. And after talking, I guess I felt a release of energy when everybody was like shaking their head in agreement with what I said. So after that, everything was,
that feeling of
confidence after that. Yeah.
Exactly. That validation kind of gave you the extra confidence.
Yeah. I was like, okay, I got this. I'm not too far out, you know?
No, you're definitely not too far out. Being a non-traditional student is also a unique challenge in and of itself, as well as combining being a first gen. So that is very, very amazing that you completed it. And, you know, you finished.
And also in the field, I think, that I went into, being first generation graduate student in a Caribbean, coming from a Caribbean family, a Caribbean perspective, mental health counseling is not something that is discussed. I remember my mom saying, you know, are you going to be able to make a living off of this? If, you know, this is your master's, or, you know, what do you actually do? So it was a lot of questions of whether this was something that was, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? That
profitable.
Profitable, exactly. So I think for her now, and a lot of things that's happened within our family and within the community that I've gotten involved with, it opened her eyes to the importance of counseling, especially, you know, she's a nurse and she sees a lot of stuff that I have talked to her about, you know, clients coming to the hospital, being sent into the psych ward. She's become more sensitive to it because of me going into the field as well.
And as Jolene said, we do come from a Caribbean family, and it is something that is tough. You know, I can recall, and as I've written about on the blog, is, you know, just the path that I could have taken, which was I almost wanted to withdraw from law school just because, you know, I had it drilled in my head that I had to succeed, and I had to succeed exceptionally well. And so that's just a tough burden, in my opinion. And I've gotten some emails and some questions about what should one do when you have the whole family resting, you know, expectations resting on your shoulders, when they want you to pass, but you have to pass at the top of your class. And if you come in second, it's just a tough, you know, challenge, because here you think that, you know, you had no one else to seek out information except really think to yourself, have I asked the right questions for everything?
And so, you gave everything your best as well.
So. Exactly. So, you know, I
and
think
the reality of it is, sorry to interrupt, is our profession is already picked out for us coming from a culture background.
Exactly.
Because you either go into doctorate, medicine, or some, you know, like you said, law.
Or an engineer.
Computer exactly.
Technology.
So to go, you know, to go into law school, I think the expectations were really high for you.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very troubling at times. But
yeah,
I mentally survived, or, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, what do you think, you know, what would you say to someone, or what have you seen work with someone that knows that their family is literally counting of them? No, not just the immediate, you know, three members that might be in the family, three or four, but, you know, the whole tribe, which is would be like the extended family members from where they're from, that the family's home country, or even if it's not the home country, but, you know, the whole, you know, heritage that they may come from that is relying on them to make the family name something that rises higher than they've been able to do.
All right. Coming from mental health perspective, I would say you have to start with knowing who you are and always staying true to yourself and what you believe in. Because the only way you will succeed and succeed for your family is you yourself knowing what you want, knowing this is really what I want, and how, and also mentally taking care of yourself about how you feel about, you know, the road that you're about to take. You know what I mean? I would say try to think less of the expectation, but more of what you could give to yourself and to the profession that you're going into. And then the success will come afterwards. Because if you don't have a passion for what you're going to go into, then you're not going to succeed. And that alone would not help the family unit. And I think also having a line of communication, I think, with your direct family and family people that you count on, give them the expectation of the type of support that you expect to receive from them, the type of encouragement that you yourself need to hear. And that type of security, I think, will push you more towards, like, you know, wanting to accomplish and wanting to try hard. You know what I mean?
Yes. If I could just add something here, you're absolutely right about having that direct conversation with your family to know what communication is necessary. Because when I was about to sign those withdrawal papers from law school, my brother and I, who were close, we spoke about, you know, what I was going to do. And then he basically communicated what I needed to my parents and let them know, this is how we must handle the situation. This is how we must handle her while she's in, you know, trying to be a first generation law student. And without that advocate, you know, my lifeline, my brother at that time,
I would not have been able to have the type of support that was so necessary for me to be able to make it through the first year of law school.
Right.
And so I totally agree with what you're saying about sitting them down and really educating your parents or family members, whoever they may be,
yeah,
about what is
the road that's ahead of you, the challenge is going to be, and what you need from them as a support system, and the fact that you do need a support system. And for those who don't have a support system, connect to a spiritual faith, whatever that being, whatever it is, you know, connect to that. Make time for yourself. Don't be so bombarded, but I always say, in the morning, I have 15 minutes to myself where it's just silence and it's quiet. It's just me and my spiritual thoughts and my thoughts. And whenever, by the time I open the door, then I let everybody in. So then the chaos start, but I already have 15 minutes of peace to myself. So I also say, take care of yourself and give yourself time and know, you know, what you want. If you don't have, always have something to connect to outside of yourself. You need an out. And I believe that it's huge to have an out, whether it's a family unit, whether it's a friend that you call on, a pastor, or whether it's, you know, just writing, and it's nature, it's exercise, whatever it is, have that time for yourself, because that's how you're not going to be so burnt out with the work that you're dealing with.
Right.
Yeah.
But, you know, you brought up something that it just clicked in my head that I wanted to kind of revisit again. You said during class that you spoke, you know, in class to talk about some of the different, you know, well-known
theorists.
Right. And so, but I guess let's talk, like, before you even spoke, like, how are you, you know, what if you don't get an opportunity to speak, but yet you're having a burning feeling in your heart and in your, you know, to speak and share something because you feel that you can add to the conversation, you know,
and also be confident and not be insecure in what you're about to say.
Exactly. So what do you think, you know, what do you think is good for that? What's a good, you know, maybe not an exercise, but way of kind of pushing past that feeling that
those anxieties
and raising your hand or just, you know, chiming in when might be like an open flow of discussion?
Well, I'm gonna say this, and you always resonate. My mother said this, and you always resonate with me. My mother would always say, "If you don't speak, I cannot hear you." So. Because she always told me that, I think that's something I carry with me, where if I am passionate about something or I feel like I have something to say, I always hear her in my voice say, "Nobody can hear you, Jay, unless you speak." So I would say, just get the courage. Whatever you're saying, you may think is dumb, but somebody else will connect to what you're saying. Somebody else will understand it. So, and you might be bringing insight. Like what the professor said, the question was, about discussing the different theories. And my perspective on it was, most of these theories was based on research with white men. There was no cultural perspective. So what I had to say had to deal with the fact that, you know, does this therapeutic method work when there is a lack of research that's done on it from a cultural perspective and dealing with different cultural background outside of the European you know, studies that was done.
Mm-hmm.
So that was something that the professor was like, "That's a good point to bring up." But had I not say anything or had I not express myself, it would be something that would be like, you know, silence in my opinion. So you never know what you have to say, or, you know, who or what will relate to it. So I would say, don't let your anxieties get the best of you. It's better to be heard than to be unheard.
Absolutely, because you definitely would add a different layer to the conversation that is not really, you know, in the mindset of the majority of who's in the classroom or even the majority of the studies that are being done, because it is, you know, most likely being dominated in the literature or dominated anywhere else that's within that profession or industry. And, you know, you can kind of invoke some different perspective that now needs to be researched and investigated.
Yep.
And so that's great. And I totally understand. I remember it just, you know, being in school, I would always wonder, like, why, how do these people know everything, and why, right. you know, why should I let them, you know, be the only people in the class having this discussion? I kind of want to engage as well. And, but that didn't come till second or third year of law school. It wasn't in the first year. So I'm not saying that I was bold enough to start that way, but right. I was bold enough to end that way.
Right. In the world that we live in now, everything is social media. There's Google. You don't know it. Before you, if you have a fear of asking your question, you know, you don't really have to. I guess you could Google it. But the reality of it is, just ask it. You know, there's an answer out there for something. People, everybody believe there's an answer out there for something. So I would say just don't let your anxieties get the best of you. Anxiety is a really tough thing to deal with. And once you, they start building up, they're harder to make, you know, to get rid of. So I would say do breathing exercises. You know, write your thoughts down. So you won't, if you feel like, if you have an issue with speaking or you get nervous with speaking, I would say if you have a question, just write it out and then read it from your paper, you know, before you ask. So, because I'm huge on writing, so I write everything down. Because in case I forget, or I forget the way that I want to say it. So just write it out. Just take different steps.
Well, how about the flip side of, you know, so before I jump to that, let me say that's true. Because I as I age, I know I am definitely starting to forget a few things. And right. I definitely want to, you know, not miss the conversation. So I write it down. But before I didn't have to. But yes, writing it down is good because you want to make that point. And if it's, if for some reason it's transforms during a conversation, there's nothing mm-hmm. wrong with going back because, you know, you write it down and it would still be a relevant right. Input. So, but just to kind of say this, we are talking about, you know, you making the right comment. Mm-hmm. The correct and the proper comment. But what if you make the wrong comment? You know, that could be crushing to a first gen that decides, you know what, I definitely was off base here. I didn't know what I was saying. So how do you kind of get over that, like, oh my gosh, a little embarrassing moment and say,
but can I challenge you?
Sure.
Okay, is there such thing as a wrong comment or a wrong question?
You know what, she's right, because she did there say isn't. That it there's no dumb question.
There isn't. Because the reality is, it may come off wrong mm-hmm. to people around you, but in your mind, it was, you felt it was right, or you felt you, if it was a question, you felt vindicated in asking the question. If it was a comment, you had to feel some sort of vindication in the comment you're about to make. Whether it's wrong or right, disrespectful, you know, or indirectly, or it's offensive to someone, you could always apologize for a comment that one may find offensive or one may find disrespectful. But at the end of the day, this is a thought that was created within you that you thought about. So does it make it right or wrong?
So it doesn't make it right or wrong, except for the of
the response you get back.
The response you get back and from the hearer or the seer of anything. So, but what I guess I'm trying to get at the point is, if someone perceives it as the wrong comment, if it, even though you are truly sincere and you know when you fully believe your comment, that may not be well received by someone, what do you do when, if someone decides that they want to kind of believe that it's wrong and or say that it's wrong, and how should you react to that? Because your first opinion, you know, won't mm-hmm. be, oh my gosh, I had a good belief, I thought it was right. No, you might, you know, I think be open
to criticism. Don't take stuff personally. Mm-hmm. Don't internalize things. And I think that's really what it's about. We in a world, in a society where we don't know everything. We learn from each other mm-hmm. and what's put out there. So I would say, don't internalize what it is. Mm-hmm. Take it as a criticism, or as a constructive criticism, as I would say. You know, my first paper that I got back in graduate school that I wrote, that I felt like it was the bomb paper, I got it back and it was red all over my paper. I saw red. Mm-hmm. I wanted to cry. Matter of fact, I did cry. I was confused because I'm like, I spent my whole time writing this paper, and then I literally had to go to the professor mm-hmm. after she gave me my paper, and I was like, I just need to understand mm-hmm. what is wrong. She's like, well, did you read the comments? I was like, no, because all I see is red. So I don't know. She's like, I need you to read the comments. And she had an attitude and everything. So I read the comments starting from one to another. And the reality of it is, she was actually teaching me the clinical way of writing, because mm-hmm. what I was writing was not clinically right in order to go into a clinical field. But my first initial reaction and feelings about it was like, I was hurt. Mm-hmm. I was like, I was confused and I didn't know how to react to it. But what kind of made it better for me was the fact that she was willing to, after she made me read every comment, she went over the whole paper with me and showed me different ways I could have written it that could have been more clinical and made more sense. Because, like I said, this was my first paper.
Right.
And then my final paper that I turned into her, she gave me an A. There was no marks in it. So, you see what I'm saying? So, it's kind of like, you know, you don't know everything.
Right.
You know, you're going to get a... You don't know everything, and but it's going to take that one person or somebody to open your mind to... Well, I hear what you're saying, but what about the possibility of this? Or there may be a right way to do this, or a wrong way. It's up to you how you, you know, how you perceive it. If it's a question of opinion, that person have the right to have their opinion, and you have the right to have your opinion. That doesn't mean you still can't go on or be friends or talk about it or have a healthy discussion, as long as the discussion remains healthy.
Right, and I totally agree. With the within the professional world, there are certain styles of writing that is important when you are handing it to the audience or to that person that's, you know, working and teaching within that, you know, profession or career. So it's, you know, it's tough to be aware of that. You don't know that. You're just coming in the first time. So you're just like, I'm going to write it grammatically correct. I'm going to write it with good sentences.
Right.
I'm just going to make sure there's
certain... Have your sisters checked it. Have your mentor checked it.
Everybody. You know, you dotted your I's, cross your T's, everything to make sure that it's just a good product. But you, you know, you don't know that it's not... It's a good product. It's written well, but it needed to be written... In the clinical setting, or it needs to be written as a legal document. So it's just very confusing. I totally remember those traumatic in my mind moments that you know I was told how to write and didn't write in the fashion that I was expected to write.
Exactly.
And so it was learned. You know, I taught. I mean, it was taught to me. I learned it, and you know, you move on. You definitely have the. You know, you're welcome to.
You don't internalize it. You take it as growth.
Absolutely.
And then you grow from it, especially if it's a field that you're passionate about. Your master's is something that is exactly what the title sounds like, just like in law. It's what you... This is the profession you actually going to work in. This is not your undergraduate. It's like this is the profession that you are going to make an earning from. So you want to go into the world... knowing and being knowledgeable about, you know, about the work, about what you're doing. You know, when you do get in the field, it's better to be embarrassed while you're in the school setting than to be embarrassed when you're in a professional setting.
Stop. Let's repeat that one more time, maybe two more times, so it can be clear to people.
So it's better to be wrong in the school setting than to be wrong in the professional setting. Because in a professional setting, they don't forgive. They don't give you redos. You either get fired, you get written up, or you just look down as you can't do the job.
Exactly.
So, but when you're in school, it's like, okay, now let's learn, like you said, the right way to do it and how to, you know, this is a environment for you to actually make mistakes and grow before you actually go in. Actually, and you know, your decisions, if you don't know where you get into the field, it could also hurt someone.
Exactly.
If you don't know knowledgeable about the type of work you're doing, it could hurt, you know, affects people.
Or if you don't have the written, you know, assignment or the written product, it could really, you know, jeopardize, you know, the outcome of someone else's, you know, either treatment or the outcome of a case or the outcome of anything that is
a financial break deal or whatever the profession is. It's better to make the mistakes while you're in a school setting than it is when you're in a professional setting.
They're very much welcome. So just want to, you know, kind of get your thoughts also on some of, like, you know, statements that parents use when they're sending their kids off, or if, or when they find out that person will be the first in their family. So, you know, I was reading that someone made a comment, make me proud. Like, mm-hmm. that seems like something very encouraging, but it's, there's so much that comes with that. What do you think about that?
That carries a whole weight of responsibility.
mm-hmm.
I think it carries a whole burden, because then you go into what is proud. Mm-hmm. Then you go into mentally, like, does that mean I can't make a mistake? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, as like Paris would say, is, don't forget I am paying for the school.
exactly.
Don't waste my money.
exactly.
So I think make me proud is, oh my God, it's just, that is just, it's a burden. I remember I recently told one of my sister's friend this, when she made, you know, she did tell her son, she's like, make us proud and everything. I said, we don't want to overwhelm him or give him that type of response. Just to tell him, do your best.
Yes.
And I think that's the best thing my mother had to learn to tell me, because I do, my siblings, you know, particularly my sister, we're close in age, you know, she was always like, your straight A students was on top of stuff. And for me, it was more like, I do stuff on how I feel, mm-hmm. or it had to make sense to me. So I think my mother had to learn to be like, just do your best. And that became like what she always told me.
Right.
Do your best. And I think that's the best way. That's what, how, you know, that's how parents should talk to their kids. Like, tell them to do their best, because you know what your child's best is. Mm-hmm. And they also know what their best is. At least it gives them the kind of leeway to saying, you know, my mom has an expectation, or my dad has an expectation, or my parents, my uncle, whoever, you know, raised them, have an expectation of what their best is, and that's what they're going to try. I think make me proud is just very heavy, because it's like, you know, this is, you know, your life dependent on it. This is for the family. Don't embarrass the family.
Exactly.
You know, so I don't like make me proud.
Especially when your last name's at the beginning of the alphabet.
Do you understand what I'm saying? So it's kind of like, you know, I don't really like it. I think the only way, you take it in a way that will say, do your best. That's how I would take make yeah. me proud. I would say to, I would do my best. That's how I would respond to it. Make me proud, son or daughter, and I would say, mom or dad, I would do my best.
Exactly.
And that's just the best way I think you could respond to it.
That's really good. I really like that.
Yeah.
I didn't think about what would be a better phrase for make me proud,
right,
but
right.
do your best is a really good one, because mm-hmm. that's all anyone can really expect of you, and mm-hmm. you know, should expect from you, because I'm sure you're not going away.
Just know you could also push yourself to the best of your abilities.
Exactly.
I think we question ourselves so much as intellectuals or as professionals or however you identify, but just know that, you know, whatever you think is your limit may not be your limit. So push yourself to the fullest limit that you know, and be open to pushing yourself.
Great. That yeah. is really good.
Yeah.
And because many nights that I wanted to give up, but I just said, you know what?
Yeah.
I know I can go a little bit longer. I can go a little bit
yeah.
harder on this one, just because, you know, I'm not totally tired, but
right.
I'm definitely getting frustrated, but not tired. So I can definitely agree with that. So now let's take it, you know, so you've done the years that you need, and you're down to
yep.
maybe like the last few months where it's essential, because in a profession
right.
Or in the career that you choose, it's definitely something where now you have licensing
yep,
exams.
Yeah, studying for the board.
Yeah, you
yes.
have definitely professional exams that must be done to really practice or work
yeah.
in that area, because you can always find something where you might not need those exams. Yeah. But if you want to kind of get deep and involved in where you are pursuing,
yeah,
what you're pursuing,
you want to live to the full potential of that degree. Yeah,
exactly. So I remember studying for the bar, and which is the bar exam for students, law
mm-hmm.
students that want to take or practice in any state that they seek fit or want to. And so I took the Maryland State Bar Exam, and it was frightening to me because
yeah.
I finished law school in New York, and each state has their own set of laws, and you don't learn Maryland laws while you're in law school
right.
Or in a New York law school. So I would say that I was, you know, because finishing school is great. You finished it.
Right.
It feels
right.
wonderful. But then what do? You know, this last stamp is the test.
That's what's going to validate.
Yep.
You know, that degree.
Exactly. So I'm curious to find out, you know, with your own feelings about it, you know, what do you say to someone? You know, I'm sure you've had conversations about it, but what do you say to someone that's, you know, feeling excited that they're done, but yet they have to know that there's something waited, waiting for them?
I'm in that anxious mode. I think I'm more anxious because I, the good thing, I love my school and the program that I went because they actually get you prepared for these type of exams. So we had, before you graduate, you had to take a similar exam to the national, for us, the NCE instead of your bar. It's the National Counseling Exam. Mm-hmm. So, but we took what they call comprehensive exam, which is like the National Counseling Exam. And I remember the first time I took it, I didn't pass.
Mm.
And I, by one point, my feelings was really hurt. And it basically tests the knowledge of, you know, what they have taught you, what you've learned and everything like that. So approaching this exam, I'm nervous because, one, I paid $345 for it. two, I'm not trying to pay another $345 for it. Mm-hmm. But it would validate, for me, that's what really is going to show that, you know, I know the work that I'm doing and that I'm licensed to be a professional, a licensed therapist. So right now, I don't question myself. I try to practice what I'm doing and everything that I do as like a study, you know, study way, because I do work as like a therapist now. So I'm studying under a licensed therapist. So therapeutically, I try to, you know, connect everything with the exam and how I do it. I would say resources, like a group of us who graduated, we all get together and we study together and we test each other and we all are in the field now. We've got jobs, like, thank you, Lord, in the field that we're going into where we all use, you know, our clients to as a study guide in a way. So you have to be able to apply what you know, because that's basically what the exam is about, is applying what you have learned and what you know to be true.
Mm-hmm.
So it's tough. I have bad testing anxieties and I literally have to meditate and I have to breathe and I literally have to take time to myself before I take an exam because you just never know.
Yeah. And the thing, interesting enough, you know, I totally agree with the testing anxiety. I remember when I was a student in undergrad, not even law school, in undergrad, and one of my teachers recommended that I write on all the things that I was thinking about on a post-it note and put it in a box. And you know, she granted me or approved, make sure you get it approved, even with testing, because I know that you were not allowed to bring anything to any exams, that I could just put all of those things on a post-it note and put it in a box and sit it right in front of me, knowing that I can't think of anything but what I'm being tested on. So if I was thinking about my family, if I was thinking about any kind of person I was dating at the time, or if anything about, you know, what needed to be done in my dorm room or what needed to be done some community organization, it was in a box. So at least I knew they were important, but they weren't important for the time of the testing.
Yeah.
And so it was very helpful to have that recommendation. So, you know, like Julian was saying, you definitely need to remove some of those anxieties or as much of them as you can to
distractions.
Exactly.
Don't be distracted. Try to stay focused because you completed the goal. Now you just have to complete the task. That's how I view the board.
It's like
a task. So just stay around positive energy. I also find that, you know, people, motivating people and people that will motivate you or contribute to your growth. So I would say positive energy. And as far as anxiety goes, meditate. Do whatever form of meditation you believe in, meditate daily. If it's, you know, before the exam to the day of the exam, you know, have that 30 minute of meditation daily before you even open the book to study. You know what I'm saying? And time yourself, you know, don't try to overburn yourself and like, I'm going to tackle this whole study book in a month or in a day. Just do one page, one question, or however it is, you know, to the extent of whatever the exam is. But the anxieties are not going to help you pass the exam. Don't overburden yourself. You have to breathe it out.
I agree.
Yeah.
Because my bar exam was 2 days, and thankfully, I listened to someone else, you know, or what the normal thing of doing is renting or reserving a hotel room. Mm-hmm. Don't stay at home. You don't, you know, nope. Unless you live by yourself, you can definitely stay at home. But right. Reserve the hotel room to mm-hmm. take to have a good night's rest the night before without having the family presence of saying, so how'd you do the first day?
Yes.
How do you think you do the second day? So yes. It's definitely having that time to yourself really aided in me, you know, passing. And I really do, you know, feel
it's a great idea.
That it's important to separate yourself from people. Not to say that they're not supportive, because it's good right. to stay around them. Right. But
you want the energy, you want the vibe, but you also need to be focused.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But so I want to kind of close this conversation mm-hmm. by, you know, seeing, you know, what other tidbits that you wanted to share with our listeners that we may not have discussed.
I think as first generation graduate students, it's something to be proud of. I think be proud of yourself, your culture, heritage, your background, and that the knowledge that you've gained, you could pass it on to your family. You pass it on. You educate your family, educate yourself on what you've learned. You know, you leave graduate school learning a lot about yourself and a lot about the world around you. So I would say don't let the knowledge stop and keep encouraging other you know, little cousins or older cousins to be a first graduate, you know, and seek professions, not professions that their parents want them to, but professions that they desire or they feel they can make a contribution to society.
Thank you. I'm so happy that Jeneline Altima was here to discuss and share, because it's so important to spread what you know and what you have experienced. And so that you can kind of give or shed light for others that might be going through the same. So this is one segment of the talk about mental health yes. and first generations, students, graduates, professionals. So there'll be another segment, maybe in writing, but it'll be explored. And I hope you stay tuned. So thank you again to Jeneline Altima.
Thank you for having me.
Good luck on the future and good luck to you out there. Bye.